It appears I am recording.
Okay, me too.
Delusions of Grandeur.
Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Delusions of Grandeur, the Star Wars Delusions of Grandeur, here on the Journey Into podcast. It is Rishi Outfield and I once again here to talk about Star Wars, specifically to talk about the new Ahsoka TV show. How you doing, Rish?
Oh, I'm fine. Are you a big believer in that saying, you made your bed, now you have to sleep in it?
Yeah, I think that's applied to my life at several different times.
Well, I feel like we should apply it to what we're doing right now. I bugged you time and again. Let's do the Delusions of Grandeur show again. Hey, let's record on Monday. Oh, you can't on Monday. Let's record on Wednesday. Oh, you can't on Wednesday. Let's record on Saturday. Oh, I can't on Saturday. I'm sorry. Let's record on Sunday. Oh, you can't on Sunday. Let's record today. And here you are. And now I'm like, oh boy, why are we doing this? What got into me? What? I think that's what you made your bed. Now you have to sleep in it means.
Is it too far away from the last episode, or is there just general enthusiasm for the show?
Well, if these things take a long time for me to edit. You know, if you're listening right now, it's probably late September, and it's all way in the past. There have been like 3 episodes since we're recording this, and you know how it is. It's just like everything takes longer than you think it will, and this isn't our job.
Yes.
You know, an actual job. And so we fit it in when we can. And it tends to be like, okay, after I get these things done, then I have 3 things. And one of them could be Delusions of Grandeur. I don't know if that makes sense, but
it totally makes sense. Yeah. Trying to work everything in that you want to do with everything that needs to be done can be difficult for sure.
But it's a new show. And obviously they spent a lot of money on it, and it's been a long time in coming. I think you were there in the room when Rosario came out, or maybe she wasn't even there. I can't remember. They were shooting it when we were in Anaheim.
Yeah, she wasn't there the first day. She came after that, the next day or two. But of course, I wasn't there for that. But yeah, she was busy shooting it at the time on that first morning of... Well, I guess not the last celebration, because they had the one in London last year, but 2 years ago, I guess.
But had she recorded some kind of greeting that they played?
Yeah, it was just a little, hey, I wish I could be there. Sure, having fun doing this.
Did she look like Rosario Dawson? Or did she look like Ahsoka Tano when she recorded that message?
Oh, boy, I think she would look like Ahsoka Tano, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, there's a, what do they call it, like a... time delay. No, that's not it. It's the opposite of a time delay. Like a sped up video that I saw just last week of what she goes through in the makeup chair. And yeah, it's like 2.5 hours or to become Ahsoka. And like they put the little markings on her face with a stencil, you know, so that they're exactly the same every time.
Oh, right.
And that hadn't even occurred to me, but I think that that's interesting.
Yeah, I think the hardest thing for her is probably doing stuff with that giant thing on her head. And coming down and, you know, just trying to work with that, I think, would be probably the hardest part of that.
Well, hopefully they've got it down to, like, some kind of foam appliance. So it's not super heavy. It doesn't give her a headache or hurt her neck. And she has full movement with it on. Maybe there are different kinds. There's, like, a stunt one that's really, really light. And then there's a heavier one for like close-ups and stuff like that. You know, that stuff tends to happen on these productions where they know that there are certain things that Batman can't do in the regular suit. And so they'll make one that's easier to fight in. But we're not talking about Batman. You have had a history with Ahsoka. Like, did you go from... disliking her on the Clone Wars to loving her like so many people did? Or did you always like her? What were your thoughts on that character?
Well, I found the whole, that movie that they did, I found that whole thing kind of annoying. How much of a part she played in that, I'm not sure. Just the whole thing was kind of annoying to me. But I don't think I had the hatred or the vitriol that several people did, pretty much pinning all of their anger on that one character. You know, the Sky Guy thing bothered me more than her as a character, just that she called Anakin Sky Guy. And he called her Snips. That was kind of annoying. But yeah, I think I generally didn't mind her at first. And then I came to really like her as I watched the Clone Wars. And was excited when she showed up in Rebels. And that gave it kind of more of a authority to that show with her involved in it. She wasn't a regular. She was a recurring character on that show. But I've really enjoyed her character. And before this, I was excited to see her, you know, when she showed up on Mandalorian and Book of Boba Fett. So I was excited that Rosario Dawson was playing, and I thought she did a great job in those. I mean, she is definitely a different character. You know, of course, she's older, and they've been through the Galactic War and all that kind of stuff. But she does come off as more dour in these episodes than she has in the past, I think.
Okay.
But with you, like, how you didn't, you watched like the first season of Rebels. I don't know how much else you kept up with it other than that. But how disorienting was it for you to step into this Ahsoka series?
Well, I wasn't exactly a newbie. I did watch the first two seasons of Rebels. And I think the last episode I saw was the one where she fights Vader. Was that the last episode of season
right.
two or the last episode of season one? I think season one, they just reveal that Fulcrum is Ahsoka. And that's the end of that season. But season
yes.
two, you get the big fight. And I remember Vader says something like, "I killed Anakin Skywalker." And she says, "Then I will avenge him."
Yeah.
And he says, "Vengeance is not the Jedi way." I remember that and being curious because she says, "I am no Jedi." And then they fight. And I was just like, what do you mean you're no Jedi? And yeah, I it was years before I found out what that meant. I never watched Clone Wars, but I did see those last episodes there at Star Wars Celebration. And it gave me an appreciation for the character and an appreciation for that series that, I mean, people have told me those were the best episodes to watch. If you could only watch some, those are the ones. Then, yeah, I thought she was really good in that episode of Mandalorian. But I did come into this show having, like, gone out and tried to fill in the gaps. That, you know, there were videos that you could watch on YouTube of everything you need to know before watching Ahsoka. And so
right.
even though I haven't seen it, I know how she became estranged from the Jedi Order. And even though I haven't seen the end of Rebels, I know how that show ended and where it put everybody. But there were still a couple of surprises on the show, such as her having trained Sabine Wren or tried to train her as a Jedi. And I was just like, oh, wow, nobody said anything about that. That's interesting. And as far as I know, I think I even asked you. That didn't happen on Star Wars Rebels.
No,
apparently those two characters didn't interact on Star Wars Rebels. It was post Rebels.
Yeah, they knew each other. They knew of each other, but yeah, I think this is all new to everybody, the whole audience, that Sabine trained under Ahsoka. For a time there, Sabine Wren had the Darksaber, and Kanan and Ezra were trying to teach her how to fight and how to use the Force and give her, you know, some of those Jedi traits and abilities, but she struggled with it. And by the time at the end of Rebels, it seemed like, you know, she had gone back to more of the Mandalorian lifestyle and skills and interests than in the Jedi way. So yeah, I think all of that happened with Ahsoka in the intervening years during the first trilogy of Star Wars movies, off screen.
Okay. And the I wonder, I mean, I'd like, so far Big hasn't watched it, and it would be interesting to hear his opinion, because he hasn't watched any of the animated stuff except for that theatrical movie with Snips and Sky Guy.
Yes.
That's all Big has seen of the Filoni-verse, if you can call the animated stuff that. I think this is probably part of the Filoni-verse, so I'm not sure what you'd call it.
Totally. Yeah, this is all Filoni.
But there's this character of Huang, who is a like a mentor to Jedi, a droid that has trained Jedi. My assumption is that he's trained Jedi. I mean, because he trains Sabine in this third episode. And yeah, that guy was completely new to me. I'd never even seen a picture of this guy because they didn't make an action figure.
Yeah, you know, I was too. I guess he was in the Clone Wars show. Like, not a main character, but I guess he was. So I've been meaning to go back and check out and see his appearances on Clone Wars. But yeah, I guess he was an established character that they decided to bring into the Ahsoka show. So I'm going to have to check that out. But I really like that, you know, he has the history of the Jedi, and it provides a little bit of banter for Ahsoka in the show. And some wisdom, I guess.
Absolutely. And he's also a comic relief character in the way that neither Ahsoka nor Sabine can be.
Yeah.
And you mentioned the word dour like an hour ago when we first started podcasting. Yeah. Oh my gosh. She's so stoic and just... Rosario is a very likable actress. And I've seen her in a bunch of things. And I always go, oh, hey, I dig her. I like the way that she delivers her lines, and she's got a glint in her eyes and stuff like that. But that seems completely gone, absent from this character. And part of me worries that they were anticipating a backlash like they got from The Last Jedi, of giving this beloved character flaws and weaknesses. Because they did that with Luke Skywalker and people lost their minds.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, maybe I'm a hypocrite because they did that with Superman and I lost my, well, I didn't lose my mind. I just lost my desire to see any more of that.
Yeah.
But she seems like one of those perfect characters that it's hard to relate to, hard to get a feel for, because she is the master character in this. And I've seen all of Rosario's Ahsoka appearances and the three shows that she's been on. And she's, I guess, one of those inscrutable master characters that we have seen throughout martial arts films and things like that. But I just, I don't know what's going on with her. What, like, she mentions to the droid that she got the information from Morgan Elsbeth by doing things that are against the Jedi code, which in my mind sounds like torture. Jedis don't do this.
Right.
And the droid says something about, you know, Sabine being not your typical Padawan. And Ahsoka says, well, I wasn't the typical Padawan either. And, you know, neither was my master. And I know that there's tons of like pathos and stuff of the Clone Wars show, of her like blaming herself for what happened to Anakin. Although, God, that couldn't be the Clone Wars show. That has to be Rebels. But I don't see any of that. I don't know what she's thinking or feeling. She's just a brick wall to me. And the character in those animated episodes just wore her heart on her sleeve. She was like Anakin. She was very emotional. She was very outspoken. You knew what she was feeling at any moment. maybe they've transferred that to the character of Sabine in this, although Sabine seems like she's one of those rebel types. No pun intended. But it's just like she can't be told what to do. No rules apply to her, kind of thing. And which is interesting because she's a grown woman on the show. She has to be. If she was a teenager on Rebels, which happened before Star Wars,
yeah,
then surely she's a grown woman. But the introduction that we get to Sabine of her on her speeder bike, blowing off this obligation that she had, it seemed like very rebellious teenager to me. Things that we've seen 100 times of somebody that shirks their responsibility and only thinks about themselves, and we're expected to think that that is cool. But I'm just too old to think that that is cool at this point. And so seeing her just get her ass kicked by this dark Padawan that I don't know the name of impressed me, where it was just like, oh, okay, so I see why they did that. Now she is humbled. So now, she will be teachable. I see why they did that. But again, with Ahsoka, I don't know what they're doing.
Yeah, I'm hoping she'll kind of get her spark back as the series goes on. I guess we saw a little bit of that maybe at the end of the third episode. Where
in what case? What happened? I remember her fighting ships on the outside of her ship, but what are you referring to?
Just the very end when she refers to Sabine as her Padawan. So she's kind of indicating, okay, we're back together. I'm here to train you. I'm here to be your friend. You know, we have work to do. But it seemed a little bit more, or maybe I'm just reading too much into it. But it seemed to be like, hey, I get it. You know, we're in this together. You know, and so maybe that opens her up for more of a good relationship and maybe even having some fun with some of this stuff as they go along in the future. I guess we also see her when she's talking to Hera. You know, Hera's more of a confidant with her, and you see her kind of open up and express herself a little bit more when she's talking to Hera. You know, Hera has a lot of responsibility going on too. But yeah, she's definitely trying to get Sabine and Ahsoka back together, so to speak, in this. And I guess that kind of opens it up. You know, a lot of people have called this, you know, Rebels season 5 or whatever. And in a lot of ways it is. I mean, it's a straight off continuation of that show, even though there's been so many years in between the events in Rebels and the events in Ahsoka. But we pretty much have the whole crew. They've talked about Ezra. We've seen a hollow of Ezra that he left behind for Sabine. We haven't seen Zeb show up yet, but he did show up, had a little cameo there in the season 3 of The Mandalorian. So I'm assuming he's going to come back into the picture at some point. Chopper's there. We haven't seen the ghost, the ship yet, but we've seen their little shuttle fighter, the Phantom. So all that is from Rebels. And I really do feel for somebody that doesn't know anything about Rebels and is coming into this and is expected to know any of this. Hopefully they can just jump in and go. It's interesting.
Well, yeah, we'll have to talk to people and find out if they are lost. Now, you didn't mention Kanan Jarrus. Is it possible he could be a Force ghost? Or do they just...
He could be. He could show up as a... He never did in Rebels. But yeah, that's a possibility for him to show up as a Force ghost. But that probably wouldn't happen maybe until Ezra comes back.
Okay.
Or Hera, I guess, too. Because him and Hera, of course, were very close. In fact, we have Jason Syndulla, who's the son of Hera. And they never said it, but I guess we're all assuming it's Kanan, right?
So, oh, they never said?
They may have implied in the... Because it was kind of the coda. He showed up in the coda for Rebels.
So his name's not Jason Jarrus?
No, I think it's Sandula.
Oh, interesting. Okay. Well, I didn't feel very lost. I mean, there are little details here and there. Like, they show the whales, and I understand the significance of the whales, but only because I did my homework.
Right.
And they refer to Morgan Elsbeth as a night sister of Dathomir.
Yeah.
And I only know what that is because I've done my homework, but I haven't ever seen them. Darth Maul's mother was a night sister, right?
Yeah, pretty much the women of Dathomir are of the night sisters, and then the men. Yeah, I never quite figured all that out. But yeah, they're of the same species and family and whatnot.
And yeah, she uses like this green magic, which is interesting. It's cool. They I guess on Clone Wars they had green magic, or was it Rebels? Where did we see the Night Sisters?
Mostly on Clone Wars, I think. Yeah, and they dip, you know, I don't know if it's a version of the dark side of the Force, but, you know, they're pretty much like witches, you know, and they have their magic things that they do. And yeah, it's kind of got this green energy to it. I don't know if that's, like I said, a version of the Force or not, but it is kind of a magical thing.
Well, that green goo, or whatever you want to call it, is visually really cool. But also visually cool are these other two bad guys that are below. They're working for Morgan Elsbeth. And it's the Jedi, the Master, and the Apprentice. And years ago, before the prequels happened, we would always refer to somebody like that as a dark Jedi.
Yeah.
And then Phantom Menace happened, and they started using the word Sith to refer to that. But I feel like this guy is a dark Jedi. Do you remember what his name is that Ray Stevenson plays?
Balin, I think.
Okay. And they have orange lightsabers.
I'm sure.
Which are just really, yes. Really neat. And the girl has a, like a Padawan braid. So it feels like.
Yeah.
He also feels a lot like a Jedi. Like he's not a cackling dark side user. He's reserved in the Jedi way, but he just happens to be a mercenary and work for whoever will pay him.
Yeah.
But I don't get the sense that he's like an evil character, that he's consumed with the dark side.
Yeah, I don't either. You know, he's got some honor to him, you know, it seems, and he's got a lot of history that he's living up to or whatever. But yeah, he's just, they're kind of vague about it, and I think that's on purpose, you know, so that we kind of wonder, ooh, these kinds are mysterious, kind of strange. We'd like to learn more about them. Kind of.
Yeah, thing. Absolutely. And I mean, he's definitely a bad guy on the show. Like, he kills so many rebels, not rebels. What do they call them now? New Republic guys.
Republic, New Republic people.
At the very beginning of that first episode. And he kills them exactly like Darth Vader did at the end of Rogue One.
Yeah.
It feels like they watched that scene and said, okay, now do this exactly the same way. but yeah, he's very formidable. I love the way he looks. I love the way he's acting. And I wonder, do I have this predisposition to like him because I know that Ray Stevenson just died?
I don't know. I'm sure I've seen him in other things, but I'm not super familiar with him. But I just think he's a cool character, you know, the way he portrays himself, and yeah, he's just kind of a neat figure. So it is too bad, you know. And I mean, I of course we all knew that he had passed away before we saw these episodes, but you know, I didn't know what to expect in this character, but I really like him. I think he's pretty cool. Yeah, and then there's this weird Snake Eyes guy that they threw in. Yes, too.
I completely forgot about that. Snake Eyes, I was just like, what? There's no reptile people on this show. is it called Merrick or Maroc or
something like that? Yeah, Maroc, I think. Yeah, I have no idea what to think about that guy. There's been so much speculation online. Who is, when he takes off his mask, who is it going to be? Is it going to be Ezra Bridger himself? Is it going to be, oh, who did I hear? Oh, Barriss Offee?
There were people that saying that it's Vader's secret apprentice from Force Unleashed.
Oh, right.
Because that guy's name was Galen Merrick.
Okay.
It's the fact that he's wearing a mask makes me think that, eventually that mask is going to come off. But we've seen so many characters in the Star Wars movies that are masked just because masks are cool, and it doesn't mean they're hiding somebody's identity that you would recognize. But at the same time, the second I saw him, I was just like, okay, who is that? Oh, that's Ezra, right? And in the very, very first episode, I said, oh, that's Ezra. But it could just be a guy.
Yeah.
The fact that they didn't kill him in the third episode leads me to believe, okay, they have some reason, something for this character to do. But yeah, it's another one of those cases like when there was the Mandalorian episode called The Spies, and people just wanted to know who the other spy was.
Oh, right.
This is the true. Oh, you know what? I never trusted the armorer ever. And it meant nothing. It was just something that it was a word. And it could well be that the energy that people are wasting on on who is Marok is wasted. I mean, he could be a Knight of Ren. He could be the first one.
He could be Ren.
Or he could just be nothing. He's just he's got the weapon of an Inquisitor, right?
Yes. And I think they do say he was a former Inquisitor or something like that.
Okay. Then maybe that's all that we need. Is just like, you know, he's somebody that was trained by Vader or Palpatine or whoever trained the Inquisitors. It's just another bad guy.
Part of me hopes he never takes off the mask. That it just frustrates everybody.
oh, no. Yeah, well, that probably would be the best. You know, if the character is finally dispatched in episode 7 or something like that, and people are like, but wait. And then we haven't seen Thrawn yet, but they bring up Thrawn over and over and over again. And I didn't watch later Rebels, so I don't know how unbeatable Thrawn is. You know, I read the Zahn trilogy years and years ago, and then I read whatever you would call the book called Thrawn.
Yeah.
That he wrote years and years later that is part of the new canon. But I think that there are three of those, and I never read the other two, and I probably should have, because he's a good writer.
He is.
But but people keep saying, you know, when Thrawn returns, it will usher in a new empire. It will fix everything. And is it because he's just such a good tactician, such a good leader, that if he were in charge, the rebels never would have beaten the Empire?
Yeah, I mean, he was, his reputation and what he's shown is that he's very calculating. He has plans upon plans, and he comes to know his enemy through their art and through their culture, and really knows how to solve all these problems. The thing he had going against him in Rebels was he's set up to be the guy that they're going up against, and so he can't always win. And so it tended to be a lot of times where he would just miss them, or they would just get past him, and they'd say, oh, well, it's all part of the plan kind of thing. And then the next time it would be, they'd have to beat him again, and they would, and then he'd have to say, well, we've put things in place where we'll put an end to this.
That's interesting.
Because I don't think in Rebels they wanted that to be Darth Vader constantly being foiled by the crew, the Rebels crew.
Yeah, and you can't do that very much before the bad guy starts to seem ineffectual.
Yeah.
Or they're not scary anymore.
Yeah.
I think somebody said that, you know, the Borg were really, really scary until Voyager. When Voyager would escape them and defeat them over and over again, and suddenly the Borg was just another bad guy of the week.
Yeah.
And my memory of Rebels, of what I saw, was that there was the Imperial officer with the sideburns.
Oh, Kallus.
Yeah, Agent Kallus or whatever. and he would be defeated and embarrassed over and over and over again, so that Vader or Tarkin or the Emperor or Thrawn, none of them looked bad, but Kallus could look bad. Kallus could look dumb.
Yeah.
Until eventually, I think he just turns coat and becomes a rebel, doesn't he?
Yeah, yeah. He defects over and helps the rebels.
Which is really cool. There aren't enough hours in the day, but someday I would like to sit down and just watch all of Rebels so that I know. But it seems unlikely that that's going to happen. There were people that rewatched everything leading up to the premiere of Ahsoka, and I was just like, that is dedication above and beyond. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, I watched a few things. You know, I watched the Ahsoka episodes in Rebels, you know, a couple months ago just to get prepared for it. But
yeah, I noticed on Disney Plus they had like a button that you could click on for Ahsoka, and it would show you like the most important Ahsoka-centric Clone Wars episodes and Rebels episodes.
Yeah.
And you could just choose to watch those. But that's still like 8 to 10 hours that they wanted you to dedicate, which is not nothing.
No, there's so many other things going on. But
well, usually we sit down and we tell the story of each episode. And that's something that I enjoy when we do it. But I feel like we've gone long enough without doing that, that maybe we don't have to.
No, I guess, you know, we can just kind of say how far or where, at what point we are now and, you know, kind of things. Basically, we have Ahsoka trying again to train Sabine Wren as a Padawan to learn the ways of the Force. And she's struggling with that. But they're making strides. We had some great space battles in the last episode. I really enjoyed the nods back to Star Wars when Sabine was back in the gun turret shooting at the fighters that were coming in. You know, it really did feel like Han and Luke back in the day kind of thing. And then, yeah, like you had said earlier, Ahsoka goes out and fights the other ships on top of her ship with her gravity boots. And that was interesting that they did that. But I guess the whole thing, they're on this, can't remember the name of the planet now, but they're in the Danab system on this planet. And Morgan has unearthed this huge hyperspace ring with these humongous hyperspace drives or boosters or whatever on them. Because they plan to go to the galaxy where Thrawn is and bring him back. And everybody else is assuming, well, if Thrawn's there, then so is Ezra. Because they went for a ride with the Purgles or the Space Whales to some other galaxy. So that's kind of what's gearing up on this planet. Hera has been trying to rally the troops and go help Ahsoka. But she's been shot down by the ineffective New Republic government.
Yeah, that was an interesting scene because it was Mon Mothma and then a bunch of characters we don't know. And Mon Mothma, she's been in more shows than anybody, like, save R2 and 3PO at this point. And
that's true.
She's not the leader of the New Republic, but I think she was the leader of the Rebel Alliance. But maybe not. Maybe she and Leia had like an equal position. Maybe Admiral Ackbar had an equal position. But yeah, there obviously is corruption creeping into this New Republic, which is so young. But I guess we saw corruption on The Mandalorian season 3 as well.
Yeah, they're really kind of building that up. Yeah.
But on the Andor show, they showed just like how ineffectual the Imperial Senate was. And this seems no different, which is really sad. I think we talked about that I was just unhappy when they went to Coruscant and meet the new boss, same as the old boss.
Yeah.
I felt like, oh, shoot, well, you guys have learned nothing. Where is Leia? Where, you know? And I guess in the books, Leia sees all of this stuff happening in the New Republic and is unable to sway people and convince people that it is becoming corrupt. And so she eventually just resigns her post and goes and starts the resistance.
Yeah.
So that, you know, that makes a lot of sense when we're seeing these stepping stones that lead toward what where they are at the beginning of Force Awakens. The public at large believes that Ezra is dead, right?
Yes.
But they don't believe that Thrawn is dead?
Well, I think they do. I think they're kind of dubious of this idea of Thrawn coming back. And they think the only reason Hera's interested is because she might be able to find Ezra. And so they kind of disregard her urgency because they think she's just on her own quest to save a friend rather than, hey, this is really serious. These, you know, things are going on. They went to a shipyard or whatever where the New Republic was building ships, and they found corruption there where they were helping to build some of these giant hyper rockets or whatever for Morgan. And they made a bunch of arrests there at the shipyard, and she was using that as saying, hey, look, this is going on. They were saying, what were they chanting?
One of them said, for the Empire, before he like pulled his weapon.
Yeah. And so she's telling them about these things, and I don't know, it seems to be falling on deaf ears. Supposedly, the one senator that she was particularly getting into it with, he's the father of one of the kids that was on the Resistance animated show.
Right, had the same last name that starts with an X.
Yeah. But I didn't even make it through one season of the Resistance show, so I can't say too much about that. But
yeah, was that a show that was canceled, or it had its whole run?
I think it only had a couple seasons. I don't know if it was supposed to have more and they curtailed it, or if that they just said, okay, that's good. But it was hard for me to get into that one.
And why was that?
It just didn't seem to apply to, like, you know, they were trying to kind of building up with the, every once in a while, Poe Dameron would show up. It was this place where they would train pilots and they'd have these contests and stuff. And they tried to make it relevant to the universe at large, but it just kind of seemed to be its own little thing. And it just wasn't as impactful as something like Rebels or even Clone Wars. It was kind of tangential to everything else that was going on.
Okay. I didn't see very much of it either. I was trying to watch it with my nephews, and once they lost interest, I never went back.
But that's not what we're here to talk about.
No, I
guess one thing that I'm interested to see, get your take on it to compare with mine, but what's your sense of Mary Elizabeth Winstead as Hera Syndulla?
I don't want to be negative. I there's so much negativity in Star Wars fandom, but I mean, let me just say that I think she looks ridiculous and she seems super, super young for the part, but that's how about you?
Similar, looking at the cartoon, the animated Hera, and comparing it with her, it just doesn't seem like the same person. The animated face is a little bit wider. Mary Elizabeth Winstead seems a little too white for the role. I don't know why I feel that way, but it just seems like Hera would be better played by somebody of either African American or Latino, or, you know, I think Rosario Dawson would make an excellent Hera Syndulla, but she can't play all the characters.
Well, remind me, didn't Hera have an accent? Or was it just everybody else from her world?
Yeah, I think it's kind of like her father had the same kind of an accent. So I think that's kind of what it was. But I have nothing against Mary Elizabeth Winstead. I think the only thing I really know her from is 10 Cloverfield Lane.
Yeah.
I know she's been a bunch of stuff. But yeah, I don't think she's doing anything wrong. I just don't see her physically as representing Hera Syndulla. But that's a minor quibble. You know, she does fine. But I just wonder if I was the only one that... I haven't heard anybody else really talk about that. But.
Well, I like Mary Elizabeth Winstead. My buddy Jeff has this huge crush on her, so I didn't want to say anything. But yeah, I even like the color that they chose for the green seems...
Yeah.
It just seems too garish or whatever. It's hard for me to take seriously. Like, remember on Obi-Wan Kenobi, they had the chief inquisitor, the grand inquisitor.
Yeah.
And they were trying to match his look to Star Wars Rebels.
Yeah.
I just thought he looked ridiculous on Obi-Wan Kenobi. Just like every time I saw him, I was just like, that looks really funny to me. And I feel that same way on Hera. And I shouldn't, but I do. It's that there are certain looks that are really hard to pull off, I guess.
Yeah. I guess that's one of the dangers of converting an animated character into a live action character.
Well, the proof of the pudding will be what we think of Thrawn when we see him. You know, I haven't seen any live action Thrawn. Well, I guess no one has, but we know what Lars Mikkelsen looks like, who voiced Thrawn on Rebels.
Yeah.
And he is going to be in blueface, I guess, but it'll be really interesting to see if that just, something clicks in our heads and we're like, that's Thrawn.
Yeah.
Or if it's one of those where I was like, that doesn't, in the same way as that Hera just doesn't, it's hard for me to buy. And maybe it is just ethnicity or shape of face or something like that.
I didn't think about the age, you know, you said she seemed too young and that's correct as well, I think. You know, Hera's pretty seasoned veteran of all these things. And this Hera seems pretty young. You know, close to the same age as Sabine.
Yeah, Sabine seems super, super young. The thing is, if they had said that Mary Elizabeth Winstead was playing the daughter of Hera Syndulla, I would probably have no problem with it.
Yeah.
I'd be like, oh, you know what? I can see her mother in that, in her. But, oh, well, she hasn't had much to do except for talk and be in councils. And so I'm sure that she will show up to save the day at some point. And maybe I'll totally change my mind. I'm starting to warm to Sabine. And so, you know, the show is changing my mind there. And I'm trying to have an open mind.
Yeah, I think that was a good crossover. I like that actress. What's her name?
I don't know. I see her name in the credits every time. It's three names.
Natasha.
And I want to say Bordello, and it isn't. I know that, but it's like...
Yeah, what I have here is Natasha Liu Bordizzo or something like that.
Oh, okay. There you go. Thank you.
I liked her better with longer hair, though, when she cut her hair. But she kind of had to match because they did that one shot with the mural. It was almost a one-for-one with the cartoon, and she had short hair in that, so she had to cut her hair, but I think they did a good job with that. I'm enjoying the show. I'm enjoying the storytelling of it, you know, that it's not just about the episode of the week. You know, we're building on something. It is strange to me that because Thrawn and Ezra, you know, left, it was almost an accident that they left with the Purrgils or whatever. And somehow now there's a map that can lead people to where Thrawn is. Like, and it was like in this ancient temple where like it had been planned for hundreds of years or something. So that seems a little weird to me, but I'm willing to go with it. And yeah, I'm kind of enjoying the storytelling and the characters for the most part. So I'm down with it.
You know, until you mentioned it, that hadn't occurred to me. Why would there be a map to Thrawn that's been around for hundreds, if not thousands of years?
Yeah.
Thrawn didn't get sent back to the past, right? It's not like Dial of Destiny.
No, I don't quite understand that part unless there's something else about this other galaxy that we don't know about. You know, we kind of understand it's in the migration patterns of these space whales, but maybe there's something else,
special about this galaxy, and that's why there's a map to it. I don't know.
Well, let me say one thing in praise of Ahsoka. You know, I complained a lot to everyone who would hear about Obi-Wan Kenobi and about Andor, your precious Andor.
I don't know if it's my precious.
No, Andor. Just anybody who's listening, your precious, perfect Andor. Those shows were so, so flabby. And this show is lean. And I don't feel like, except for the with the blast shield down, I can't even see scene, there hasn't been any scenes where I was just like, come on, guys, you're just going through the motions here. End the scene. What is, there's nothing happening. Everything has been paced very, very well. And all three episodes, especially that third one, which was only a half hour long, have flown by.
Yeah.
And things happen in each episode. And so, you know, my complaints about those other two shows of that just there being not enough story to maintain the episode, the number of episodes that there were. This one, I guess, has 8.
Yes.
And so far, the 3 episodes that we have seen have been 3 episodes. It wasn't just one episode stretched to 3.
Yeah.
Which I think even the people that love Andor are willing to admit that it's like, yeah, okay, we've kind of got a little storyline in the first 3 episodes and a little storyline in the next 3 episodes. You know, even the people that bow to her, bow to the queen of slime, those people, even they can recognize that it was, you know, just little arcs, little stories that were being told over multiple episodes.
Yeah, that probably comes from Dave Filoni too. The pacing and the, you know, he's had a lot of episodes of Clone Wars and a lot of Rebels to cover all that. And of course, we know he's been working with Jon Favreau on the Mandalorian stuff as well, just to kind of get the live action part of it down. But yeah, he's got a story to tell, so I'm willing to find out what it is.
Okay, and when Thrawn finally does show up, is he a character that we are meant to hate? Is he a character that we are meant to admire? Or is he a character who's supposed to be absolutely terrifying? And the second he shows up, it's like, run, guys, run.
Hopefully, if they play it right, he'll be all 3. He'll be terrifying and charming. And, you know, we'll want to know more about what he's up to. A lot of people are complaining that he hasn't shown up yet, and they're worried that he's only going to show up at the end, like Moff Gideon. And that might be where we're going, but maybe they're going to spend the first 4 episodes before they get to the new galaxy, and then the last 4 will be with Thrawn and Ezra in the new galaxy thing. I don't know how they're going to play that.
Yeah, the grand mystery is, you know, where is Thrawn? And what will happen when they find him? Or maybe the grand mystery is Thrawn and Ezra.
Yeah.
There was something in the very first episode with Sabine. Did she have a romantic relationship with Ezra?
You know, they got close toward the end, but I don't think they were outward lovers or dating or anything like that. He did trust her. He kind of, you know, let her know that something was up in that last episode before everybody else. So I think they implied some of that, but not to the amount that, you know, Sabine really seems to be hung up on him more so than you would think for a friend. And so, yeah, maybe something else was going on there that wasn't on screen. I don't know. Seems to be a lot of things going on off screen, but...
But, you know, that's fine because Star Wars Rebels happened years and years ago, right?
Right.
It happened before Star Wars. It was like 10 years before A New Hope, right?
Is when they started, yeah.
Oh, that's right, because time passed during Rebels.
Yeah.
And then this is 5 or 6 or 7 years after Return of the Jedi.
Yep.
Anyhow, I think we will end it here. There are more episodes to go.
Yeah, feels like a good place.
Is there talk of there being a second season of Ahsoka?
I haven't heard anything. People have asked about that, you know, because supposedly all this is leading up to the movie that Dave Filoni's doing. So, you know, how much of it will be resolved in television, or is this going to lead into stuff that's going to happen in another season of Mandalorian? And then that will lead to another season of Ahsoka, and then there'll be the movie. I don't know the answers to that, but I don't think anybody's revealed anything about that or not.
Okay, so this could be it, these 8 episodes.
Could be.
But there definitely is another season of Mandalorian coming, despite it having aired the series finale.
I think so. But again, I don't think there's been official word on that, but maybe Jon Favreau's made mention that he's done some of the writing on that. I'm not sure.
Yeah, good point. I think he did say something about that before season 3 even aired.
Yeah.
Well, time will tell. With this strike going on, it affects everything. And who knows?
It does.
Whether we'll see anything. You know, they can use that as an excuse to cancel shows and to change plans. And I guess we will find out.
Yeah. Yeah, we will. Be along for the ride anyway. Next time we'll talk all about the loath cat in Sabine's home.
Okay. That thing looked so real, but I'm already saying more than I'm supposed to.
All right. Well, thanks for listening, everybody. Feels good to be back talking about Star Wars again. We missed some opportunities in the middle of stuff there to talk about some of the stuff that's been out there, but we'll have a chance again after this is over. Yeah, we might have a long chance during the strike or after the effects of the strike before we talk Star Wars after this. So there'll be plenty to talk about, but yeah, let us know what you are thinking and liking or not liking about this Ahsoka show. You can email the podcast at journeyintopodcast@gmail.com. I think you can still call the voicemail line at 77JINTO107. And then also, if you'd like to donate to the Journey Into podcast or to Rish's podcast, you can go to patreon.com/journeyinto or patreon.com/rishoutfield and check out the options we have over there. We'd love to have your support. And I think that about does it. So may the Force be with you.
Okay, well, Marshall, just remember, your eyes can deceive you. Don't trust them.
Sounds good.
Good night.
Good night.
The Delusions of Grandeur podcast was produced by the Creative Commons side of the Force.
The Force?
Well, the Force is what gives a podcast its power. It's a license created by all living shows. You can download it, share it, feel it flowing through you. But if you take credit for it or try to sell it, I shall become more powerful than you can possibly imagine.
How does that help me?
That silence is me.
I'm trying to think of a good quote to end on.
What?
Said I was trying to think of a good quote to end on.
Oh, okay. I was saying that silence is your cue to end the episode.